Welcome to today's episode of the Normalized Surrogacy Podcast. My name is Carrie Flamer Powell, experienced gestational surrogate, surrogacy agency founder, and owner of Surrogacy Mentor and Modern Parent Mentor, where our aim is a safe, ethical, and enjoyable surrogacy journey for all. Today, I'm joined by our special guest, Alex Cornsweet of Our Beautiful Surprise. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you so much, Carrie. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to chat with you. So yeah. I saw you originally on social media, where you talk about your parenthood journey, which we're going to dig into here in a second. But you have a great story that I think our listeners are going to be super interested in hearing about, which includes IVF and surrogacy and spontaneous pregnancy, right?
Yeah.
So all the things. Before we dig into that, I do want to tell our listeners a little bit about you. So Alex is a mom of three boys. After years of infertility, recurrent pregnancy loss, surrogacy, and more, she speaks openly about her path to motherhood and life as a mom at Our Beautiful Surprise on social media. Alex's company, The Empowered Space, includes a customized one-on-one exclusive program experience for intended parents. This program helps intended parents with their transition into parenthood so they can find more acceptance, joy, and connection. All right. So it's not so common that there are programs available for intended parents after they drop the intended and just become parents. So I'm excited to talk about that. Before we dig into all of that, let's just start at the very beginning. Why don't you tell me about your path to parenthood?
Yes. So as you said, I have quite the unique path to parenthood. I think that anybody that's experiencing infertility or going through anything where they're having a difficult time becoming a parent, I think we all end up having these very unique stories. But I think for me, it's just, you know, you never know what's going to end up happening. So when my husband and I first started trying for a child, we actually found out pretty soon that we needed to do IVF, which is not that common to be told, you know, 6 months into wanting a child that you already need IVF. And I'm the kind of person that's very proactive. I don't just wait for things to happen. And so when I wasn't having a cycle and I felt like something was going on with my body, I insisted on going to see a specialist. And just like many people, I got pushed back, but I just said, I know myself and I think there's something wrong. And so when I went into the doctor, I found out that I had a blocked fallopian tube and a few other issues where the doctor said, you know what? It's not going to be very possible for you to get pregnant on your own. It's not going to be like an IUI is probably not going to really work for you. And so he just recommended going straight into IVF. And this is where we were very fortunate that we were living in a place where we had a full round of IVF on our insurance. We were living in Massachusetts at the time. I know not everybody has that. And so we were able to jump into IVF right away, which is something else that I know is not possible for everyone financially.
So a couple questions really quick. So first of all, how old were you when you were told to jump straight into IVF?
I was only 26.
Oh so, my gosh. That was probably a huge shock.
Yeah. So that's actually, I'm glad you said that because I always forget to say how old I was when that happened, because I feel like a lot of people think there's this standard of you need to try for a year if you're under 30 or for 6 months if you're under 35 or, you know, it's going to happen. And I definitely had that where doctors were like, well, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And I said, but it might not happen. And so how about I find out what's going on with my body? I at least have a right to know what's going on inside of my own body. Right. And so that's when we found out pretty quickly that I was right and there was something going on. And so, yeah, when you're 26 and you think that you're just going to have kids, you know, without any assistance, it is quite surprising. I think both my husband and I are the type of people that if you give us an answer for something, then we're going to take it. So it's like, if you tell me that IVF is the best chance of having a child, I'm not going to keep trying in other ways, knowing that that probably won't work. So we like jumped into right. I think I started IVF when I was 27, like shortly after I turned 27. And we got very lucky, like relatively, even though we had to do IVF, we had embryos. I was able to get pregnant with the first fresh transfer, which led to my first son. And so he was born in 2017. So I had just turned 28 when he was born. And I think that that's something that at that point, I did not consider myself in the infertility community because it had just gone really smoothly. Like we were told we had to do IVF. We did it. It worked. And I know that that is not most people's experience. And so at that point, I just thought naively, oh, well, if I want more children, we have more embryos and IVF worked the first time. And now we can just have the family that we want. And we already found the answer. Unfortunately, our difficulties happened much more with like secondary infertility or just kind of continual infertility. And so when my first son was about 9 months old, 8 months old, we had moved across the country. And so we needed a new doctor. And we said, you know what, we know that this can take a while. So we're just going to start going into the doctor, find a doctor, get things moving. So it took a long time to get that process started again, just because it was a new doctor, finding someone. We had to ship our embryos across the country, which was extremely nerve-wracking. I was like, please get here.
And because during that time, you had mentioned that you lived in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
You moved across the country, right? During
right,
this time,
to
is
California.
That why embryos had to be shipped? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we moved to California, which is where we're both born and raised. We were happy to settle back in California. But then when we were trying for a second one, that's where we had to kind of start from scratch in terms of finding another doctor. And I think I completely underestimated how hard that would be because we had had a lot of luck where the first one was really efficient and everything just went kind of as smoothly as possible. And I didn't really need that many appointments, which sounds crazy because that's not most people's experiences. But then when we found a new doctor, we felt good about it. You know, he had good rates. I knew some people that had been to him, all these other things. So then it took a little while to get started, just other tests, getting started, shipping our embryos. So then when we started, it was at this point, my son was just over one. So we thought, oh, like we'll have, you know, the 2 year age gap. Like everybody thinks is for some reason, that's what people think is perfect, which I don't understand. But, you know, I don't know who decided that, but in my mind, I thought, okay, I'll have two that are one, like 2 years apart from each other. Right. So then we started it again. I completely expected it to go well. We actually went somewhere with friends and we told all of them that we were starting IVF again because they kind of had been there with our first journey. And we literally just assumed, and this sounds so naive now, but we just assumed we're going to do it again. I'm going to get pregnant again. We're going to have a second child. So after like 5 weeks on medications, because this doctor had a different protocol, my cycle got, or the whole cycle got canceled because my lining just would not grow. It was at like 5 millimeters, which for anyone that knows, that's nothing. It's basically no lining. And if you don't have a lining, there's nowhere for the embryo to stick and you're not going to get pregnant. Or it's very difficult to get pregnant when it's a thinner lining. And so I wasn't comfortable moving forward with, you know, low rate of success. So they canceled it. We restarted it a couple weeks later, again, 5 or 6 weeks on medication, again, canceled. So I cannot even, I was devastated. And I think that I didn't expect to be devastated by a canceled cycle.
Sure.
But I already thought this is the due date. This is how it's going to work. And I think we all do this math in our head of how things are going to work out. And when it didn't twice in a row, I thought if my body's not responding to these medications again, how am I ever going to get pregnant? And so I was really concerned about it. They ended up doing a full round of IVF again with me because we had embryos, but I had become pregnant with a fresh cycle the first time. So instead of a frozen cycle, they thought maybe we'll try a fresh cycle. That cycle, first of all, this doctor's office, not going to say anything about who they are, but I did not have a good experience with them. They acted like I was just a number. I never really felt good there. I always felt kind of rushed in and out. I almost never saw the actual doctor. It was just kind of too much. And at that point, all I wanted to do was get pregnant so I could leave that office, which sounds kind of ridiculous, but I just wanted to move on. And I thought, I don't want to start again. It took us so long to find a new doctor. I don't want to start from scratch again, which I think is where people can get stuck. anywhere with things because they don't want to wait anymore because the waiting is really hard. And so we did the fresh cycle. It was, he had me on stim medications for 21 days, which is way too long.
Oh, wow.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot.
And it ended up where we, you know, I had another fresh transfer. I did get pregnant. I remember getting the call. I was so excited. We thought, okay, this is it. You know, I knew, like, you know, always doing the math. I knew when I was going to be due. I was so excited about it. And then less than a week later, I started bleeding and it was red blood. Like it was. And so I called the doctor. They were not kind. They said, oh, well, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. We can't do anything about it. They just kind of pushed me off, wouldn't let me come in. And then I ended up getting a blood test like a couple of days later, which confirmed that I was no longer going to be pregnant for very long. And at that point, I think that's probably the lowest I've ever felt in my entire life, because I thought we did PGT testing on these embryos. We had tested embryos. We had spent over a year getting to the point where I could actually even do a transfer, and it worked, and then it didn't. And so I thought, how is this ever going to happen? Like, now, not only can I have a hard time getting pregnant, but I can't even stay pregnant. And it was our first loss. And I couldn't believe it happened. I knew it was a possibility, but you never think it's going to happen to you. And then,
especially at your age, like you're so young and presumably all the things are like at perfect, perfect opportunity, the perfect age for your eggs, all the things.
I was still 29 at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I was 29. I did not consider, and everything kind of went well. My lining was finally a little better.
Yeah.
You know, we had embryos, they were tested, they were well rated. It just seemed like, how could it not have worked?
Right.
And so I ended up at that point switching doctors because I just needed to change. And that doctor had never had me come in for any sort of ultrasound or any sort of check after the loss. And so I went in, and it's pretty standard for new doctors, or even before you have another transfer, to do a hysteroscopy, like an in-office one where they're checking inside the uterus. So mine was scheduled for that January. So at this point, it was right before my son's second birthday. And they found, he said he couldn't even see into my uterus. There was so much scar tissue. He couldn't even get in. Right. And he said, I've never seen this happen with an early loss, which is never what you want to hear. I mean, they couldn't figure out where it came from. Or he said, maybe this was already building up from something else. Like, he couldn't figure out the source, but it was there. So then he diagnosed me with Asherman syndrome, which is the scarring in the uterus. And then I had to have a surgery, which is equivalent to like a DNC, to clear out my uterus. And then they had to put a balloon in it to make sure it didn't re-stick to itself. And so I spent my son's second birthday party the day after my surgery with a balloon and recovering and pretending like nothing was happening.
Sure.
So he had just turned two, second birthday party, spent it right after the surgery. And I was frustrated because all I wanted to do was enjoy the day with my son. We didn't know if we were going to have another child at that point. There were all these emotions with, well, he's enough. I want to make sure he knows he's enough. I don't want him to think that, you know, there's a lot of guilt associated with going through it when you have a child, because you think, he's enough if nothing happens, but it's okay to still desperately want another child.
Yeah.
And so at that point, after I had surgery, I had another transfer with a new doctor, and it was a failed transfer. And if anyone's experienced a failed transfer, I found it equally devastating to a miscarriage, emotionally, because physically it was not as difficult, but emotionally I found it the same, because I assumed I was pregnant in my head. I told myself I was pregnant. I thought I had like a plan, and I also knew the gender all the time, which was kind of hard, because like the first one that we lost was a girl. The second one we lost was a girl. And so I thought, and it wouldn't have mattered which gender it was, but I think having that gender attachment to it was this is a baby girl that we lost. And for some reason that makes it harder because it makes it more real. Sure. And I remember when we got that call, we thought, I don't know what we're going to do now because it's not working. It's still not working. Yeah. So at that point we had what I think a lot of people have, where they have a conversation with the doctors of, mm-hmm. okay, let's look at like what we're going to, right. The kind of, what are we going to do next conversation? And it's always in his office and you're like, I don't want to be here because I don't want to have this conversation. So at that point he recommended that we start considering surrogacy. Mm-hmm. And I had just turned 30. I was so surprised. I was like, how can I be 30 years old and already be told that I'm not going to probably carry another child? I just, and I went so well with my first one. I just could not figure out why it worked once. And I was so grateful that it worked the first time, but I also was so angry that it wasn't working again. And just, we were experiencing loss. And so at that point, he had a protocol of me being, because thin lining was a big issue for me. And so he had a protocol of me, I can't remember what it was called, but he had me taking a medication for about 6 months. Mm-hmm. And he said it can work, it might not work, but anything is worth a try. So 6 months is a lifetime when you're trying to have a child, because it feels like forever. You're like, I don't want to wait. And some people take breaks on their own, which is great. Like if you need a break, take a break. I did not want to take a break. It was a forced break.
Right.
And so I was like, I just let me do another transfer. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do another one. It's not going to work if we just jump into it. So he was right. But so at that point we started looking into agencies. I didn't have a lot of resources at that point. A lot of, like, I know that you have so many more resources for intended parents now and for surrogates. And I didn't have, so we were just kind of doing research on our own to find an agency, and that, which just takes forever. And so we ended up finding one. We sent in the initial questionnaire during that 6 month period. We didn't put any sort of down payment on getting on the list because we weren't ready to commit to it yet. But then we thought, between, we had so many conversations about it, my husband and I, but we said, okay, we're going to do one more transfer cycle with my body, because we're always going to wonder if that one would have been the one that worked. And we're going to get ready and have surrogacy as a backup, so that if it doesn't work, then we can put our name on a list and kind of get moving.
Right.
So fast forward 6 months, we end up doing the transfer cycle. My lining got to, I think, like a 7.5, which for me was actually really good. And it's kind of the lowest they want, but I was just happy that it got there. I got pregnant. We saw this, like a sac, everything was where it should be, which the first loss, nothing had ever been there. And then, well, we started to see a little thing on the second one, and then it didn't turn into anything else. So I remember him saying, well, it should have, more should be there at this point. And so he waited a couple days because he wanted to make sure. And at this point, I think it was like 8 weeks or so. And it wasn't even that long, but we hadn't heard the heartbeat yet. And he's like, there should be more here. Like, we should be hearing the heartbeat. We should be seeing more going on. And they said that I had a missed miscarriage. So it had stopped growing, but my levels stayed really high. And so I didn't have any warning or signs, which just felt mean. I just thought, I'd rather at least know it was happening, and I'm blindsided by this now.
Right.
So, you know, I stopped all my medications, and they said that you're probably going to have it happen naturally once you go off all the hormones. But if you don't, like, please tell us, because we're going to need to do a surgery if nothing happens. So then I started bleeding heavily. Like, I got to the point where I was like, couldn't leave the bathroom. Like, it was like hours. And so I was like, I think this is not good. Like, I think something's happening. So I went to the ER. And I remember my, it happened to be a day that my husband was out of town, which is very rare. And so my sister came with me to the ER. This was 2019, so people could still come with each other. And I remember going with her. They it was just a horrible experience. Like they took my blood work. My levels were still high, but then they did an ultrasound and confirmed that everything, you know, that I was no longer pregnant, and that basically they told me that it was over physically. Mm-hmm. I was like, it doesn't really feel like it's over. Like there's still stuff going on. Yeah. And I remember the ultrasound technician being, she just kept smiling and saying like, oh, you can just try again. You can just do this stuff. And I was like, I'm literally in the middle of having a miscarriage. Could you not say that right now? And wow. I was very clear with her. I said, I don't want to talk about that right now. I'm currently processing. I haven't even lost this baby yet. Like I'm still, and she just kept talking. And I remember looking at my sister, like, she's not listening to me. So I just wanted to get out of there. And then the doctor came in and he literally said, oh, congratulations. Oh, wait. Like,
oh my gosh.
Because my levels were still high. And I was like, no, it's not a congratulations moment. So there was just no bedside manner, horrible miscommunications. I was just so frustrated with how it happened. So I wanted to leave. So they told me it was over. They told me that, you know, the bleeding had stopped, everything was done, which it had temporarily stopped. But then the next day it picked up again. Mm-hmm. And so I called my doctor and I was like, I don't think that the ER was right. So he actually had me come in that day because he's like, if you're bleeding that heavily, I need to see what's going on. And he was like, you've just been losing clots. Nothing is gone. You're still like everything's still in there. So we needed to do a DNC the next day because he's like, it's obviously not going to happen on its own. And for that one, that was something where I ended up like spotting and stuff for months after. It was like it took until 2 or 3 months later that I was physically done. And I think that's something that also I did not know was a thing where it can just go and go and go. Right. So I remember though, the day that we were in the doctor's office and he told us, he had the monitor up and he told us, you're having a miscarriage. My husband and I looked at each other and we're like, okay, we're going to sign up for this agency. And he said to us, how about you wait and talk about it? We're like, we've been talking about it for months. This was going to be the plan always. And it takes a while to match potentially. And we do not want to wait. I can physically heal while we're on the wait list, because at least then I have some hope and something to look forward to and something that is a possibility. So we actually matched really quickly. Again, this was 2019. So it was a different world, I think, from where a lot of people are now. But we matched, we had our initial meeting. We loved each other. Like we both cried at each other's stories. You know, we just felt like it was right. We got started right away. And I remember we signed the contract with her on my birthday that year. Like we got the notice that, and so I just thought this is right. Like this is the best birthday present. We are working with her. So she ended up doing the mock transfer cycle because she was a new surrogate. And then, her name's Madison. She's wonderful. She's very open. We share together sometimes. But she had the mock transfer cycle. Then she had a first transfer and the first transfer failed. Mm-hmm. And we thought, and I know that can happen, but when you're going through it as an intended parent, you just think, well, that's not going to be me. Like, you know, I'm not going to be, which is crazy because I thought after everything else I went through, how can I still think it's not going to be me? Right. But I thought it's not my body this time. So it's good. Right. But so we ended up saying like kind of all agreeing, we're going to try one more transfer and then hopefully that works. And if not, we'll regroup and see what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. So this was March of 2020. So the week that the shutdowns happened, she was starting medication for the transfer cycle. And I got a call and they said, we're canceling her cycle because of the shutdowns. And I said, are you canceling everyone's cycle? Are you canceling just the surrogates? And they said, just the surrogates. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's not okay. Mm-hmm. Just because I can't get pregnant, this is not fair that you're canceling it. If it was my body, you would let me continue. She's not a new patient. She's already done a transfer cycle with you, and kind of back and forth. And so they ended up letting her continue because she was comfortable with it. We were comfortable with it. And
good.
We're like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So she did it. We couldn't go to the transfer or anything because it was the world had shut down at that point. And I think for her, I just felt like she had no one there either. So I think it was a lot. Mm-hmm. But we had talked about all of these things before we did it to make sure she was okay with it. Sure. And then she got pregnant with our son, our second son. Mm-hmm. And it was a very interesting, like, me and her got very close during it. We couldn't really see each other because it was full-blown pandemic time. Right. Her husband is in the Marines. He wasn't there during it. So she was just at home with her two daughters, pregnant with my son, completely isolated. And she had some people around, but I think it was really hard for her because she just didn't have the normal support system. Everything was virtual. Like, all of the therapy appointments with her group and stuff, everything had to be virtual. So she said it was nice it was virtual because she didn't have to drive anywhere. But she did, it was hard because she couldn't in person connect with other surrogates. She couldn't connect with other people that much. I couldn't be there physically to support her. And then we didn't have a lot of support because we were all isolated as well. Like, I was at home with our then 3-year-old and it was just me and him all the time. And so, and my husband was still at work, but it was just kind of an interesting time. But at the same time, we were just so grateful because we were finally having our second child. Yeah. And he was then born on my birthday in 2020. That's cool. So we, she found out the induction date and I laughed when she told me. And she's like, do you want me to change it? And I said, absolutely not. If this is the day that the doctor chose, I'm having nothing to do with that. I don't want to be responsible for any of this. He chooses, that's the day. So, and I remember that when we had him, the moment where I was so nervous until the moment he comes out, he's born, I'm holding him in my arms. And we ended up, our hospital does a golden hour where they let you be with the baby for an hour before they run any tests, as long as they're breathing and healthy and everything. And so they told us you can do the golden hour by yourself because we were at a very surrogacy friendly hospital. So they had another room for us and they said, we can do it alone or you can wait. And then we were like, she's the reason he's here and she's been a part of this. We don't want to just cut this off right now. So we decided together, her and her husband were there, me and my husband were there, that we would all do the golden hour together. And it was just really special because I got to hold him, my husband got to hold him, and then she got to hold him and her husband got to hold him. And we just all had this full moment together because he was there because of all of us. And so it was very special. And then when we left the room, she said that she wasn't sure if she wanted to do another cycle or another journey with another parent in the future. But when she saw us with him and leaving, she decided that she would do another journey because that moment was what made it worth it, because that is the moment that she wanted. And she just said it was so special, like, knowing that she directly contributed to our family. And she literally gave us the gift of life, you know? So it was just really special. And a big thing for me that was important as the intended parent was that I wanted to make sure she was okay. And so I think a lot of times intended parents, like, don't check in with their surrogates afterwards. And I think if any intended parents hear this, I do strongly suggest continuing that relationship at least for a little bit after, because I know, like, for me, I checked in with her that night. When she got home the next morning, I asked her how she was doing and feeling. And I mean, she had just given birth. Like, I just wanted to make sure she was okay. And I remember her saying that she was really happy to go home to her kids and not have a newborn at home.
Absolutely.
Like, I'm glad it's over. I can go back to my life, you know? And it's actually funny because her, she's like, I'm going to sleep. I can sleep on my stomach. I'm not breastfeeding, you know, all this stuff. So, so it was just a really good, so then a lot of times people assume that's the end of the story because that would be, but then when my son was about 4 months old, I found out that I was pregnant, which was shocking to me. And for me, I had gone through a lot. I had a lot of anxiety after my second son was born and I ended up being, like, diagnosed with either, like, generalized anxiety or not really, they didn't know what to call it because I wasn't postpartum, but I had a lot of anxiety just from things that I had not processed or dealt with on the path to our parenthood. And I was kind of still working through that. And I remember finally feeling like myself a little bit around 4 months, like, he's starting to sleep a little more, he's starting to feel good. And then I found out I was pregnant and I had these two completely conflicting thoughts of this is everything I've wanted. I wanted to be pregnant again. I'm so glad we're having another child. And how am I going to do this? Right. I have a 4-month-old and a 4-year-old and they're going to be a year apart. Like how am I going to do this? Right. And so I luckily at that point went to a doctor that I trusted who helped me with like medications just because of my history of loss. Mm-hmm. And so she made me feel comfortable because I had these conflicting thoughts of, I was terrified to have another baby so soon, but mm-hmm. I also was terrified of not having him. Like I was afraid of losing him. So that was kind of confusing because I thought both things. And then he was good. And then he was born at the beginning of 2022. And so at that point, I think the first year of his life with all three of my boys was kind of when I really needed to start figuring out how not to be going through infertility anymore.
Yeah.
Because I had just been, I was talking to someone about it recently and it was like, I called it like my anxiety bucket. Like my anxiety bucket had been full for so long that when it wasn't full from trying and like the stress of pregnancy loss and IDF and surrogacy and all of this, then I was like, well, I don't know what to do with the bucket because it's probably still full. So then I put it on my kids of feeling super anxious about them, worrying about something happening to them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very normal for people to then be terrified that something's going to happen to their child when it's been difficult to get them there.
Yeah.
And so that's actually what led me to creating my own program because I thought, you know what? There was nothing when I had my son via surrogacy after going through all of that to help me transition into parenthood. I was just kind of thrown into it. And there was this whole thing of, well, this is what you've wanted. So just be grateful for it and put your head down and don't complain about it. And nobody actually said that to me, but that's how I felt. Yeah. And so for me, I just felt like where I was with the agency, I had a huge lack of support through the process, but then transitioning into parenthood, there's nothing, there's no support. And for me, I was like, okay, there are resources for people during the surrogacy process. If they, and hopefully like, I know for you, like you have a lot of resources for intended parents and for surrogates, which is wonderful because everybody should have that. Mm-hmm. And for me, I just thought nobody's taking care of them as they transition into parenthood. Nobody's talking to them about not only what they've been through, but also now you have to be a parent. You have to figure out all these resources of they're not sleeping. They're not like, how do I feed them? How do they sleep? Like all these different things of just becoming a parent. Because I think a lot of times when you go through all of this, you think about becoming a parent, but you don't actually fully think about what's going to happen when you are a parent. Because you almost don't assume it's going to happen. So you think, hopefully it's going to happen, but I'm not ready to think about being a parent yet because I'm not there yet. And so even though I had already had a son, transitioning into having multiple children and parenting after all of the things we'd been through was just something I was not prepared for and then felt like I had no support for. And my husband and I supported each other, but it felt like nobody knew what I was going through. Nobody knew what we had been through. Being an intended parent is a very specific experience. Yeah. And it's hard if you're talking to somebody like even I had a therapist that I was talking to and she was helpful, but she did not understand surrogacy. She did not understand what I had been through. And so for me, coming from being an intended parent, I wanted to offer that to other people to say, I completely understand where you've been. Even if we have different stories, there's so many things that overlap with those journeys. And let me help you, you know, with this transition into parenthood and give you the resources so that, you know, 4, 8, 12 weeks down the line from now, you feel more centered in your parenthood. You feel like you're not like thinking about the past too much, but also that you're just proud of the journey, not thinking about it with any shame or anything like that. Like it's positive. Mm-hmm. You're proud of it. You figured out, you know, figuring out how are we going to talk about it? Are we going to talk about it a lot? All these conversations that I think are just so important before and after. And so that's kind of what transitioned me into that too, because I just wanted to create something I wish that I had when I was going through it.
Absolutely. I think that people, I've heard the term the fourth trimester, like what happens after birth. And I think that that is a very unique trimester for surrogates and for people that have gone through any form of infertility or loss, that it is 100%. Unique. It's like completely different because you're, what you're talking about, which I want to ask you some more questions about your program for parents. What you're talking about with parents, what they go through having finally been able to let go of being in the throes of infertility and trying to get to that moment where they have their baby to actually having their baby, that is very similar to what surrogates have gone through, which is you have spent months, if not years, building yourself to the point of finally having this child for someone else. And then it's all over. And everything you've been doing for, you know, in my case, it was 2 years, is done. And now it's like, where's your place? What do you do with all of those hormones and energy and time? Yeah. All the things that were going towards this project are now done. And so your program, Empowered Parenthood, helps specifically parents who've gone through infertility and surrogacy, maybe, but not necessarily exclusively either of those.
Yeah.
To transition from letting go of the infertility and the loss journey and now focusing on how to integrate that experience with the parenthood journey, right?
Right. That's exactly right. And I think for me, and I think that what you brought up about the fourth trimester is so important because intended, and it's, I love hearing the surrogate side of it as well, because I think that's how intended parents feel as well. I mean, they're going into them being parents, but it's like they've had this, like you said, project. It's like you're so focused on having that child come into your life that you're just thinking about it each step of the way, like each step. Mm-hmm. And you're not really thinking forward into having your child in your arms yet, because you also get worried about thinking about that from my experience. And so I think for me, a lot of times intended parents, and I think surrogates too, are kind of forgotten in the fourth trimester. Like surrogates are forgotten because they think, oh, well, they're done. They don't think about moving forward. Other people don't think about that. Intended parents, they think, well, neither of you gave birth. So not really the fourth trimester for you. And at least that's how we felt. Like I remember saying to my husband, like, is this how they always treat you when, when you're not the birthing partner? And so I think like for me and him, we actually bonded a lot. I mean, we were already very bonded, but like, I felt like I got to experience his perspective of expecting a child and then moving into the fourth trimester, because I thought, wow, people really treat you like you don't matter because you're not the birthing partner. And I, that's just was a really interesting experience. And he's like, yeah, that's pretty much how people do it.
Wow.
And so, and that's where, you know, these feelings of anxiety and these feelings of being overwhelmed and moving into parenthood happen to both either partner. It doesn't matter the gender. And so I think a lot of people assume that you only have those experiences if you give birth, but that's just not true. And so that's where filling that gap of support. I mean, there's not enough support for people as they transition into parenthood in general, but there's like no support for intended parents and surrogates. And so for mine, like I kind of have four overarching things that we work through in the program. And so I'm going to be giving a link to a guide that kind of goes over everything and kind of gives some ideas of the types of things that are important to talk about and what we talk about. But like one of them is acknowledging and healing. So talking about the trauma, talking about the overwhelm, identifying what these things are, and also just not pretending like it didn't happen anymore. Because I think a lot of times when you're in it, you just kind of keep pushing forward. And also moving from this guilt to acceptance, where I know a lot of people feel guilt or shame or blame in not being able to carry their own child or having to go through all of this. And so saying, you know what, like, this is my journey and it can be beautiful exactly as it was. And then facing those fears, maybe as your, you know, anxiety bucket transitions into parenthood and learning ways to counteract that. And then really just learning how to celebrate and thrive in parenthood. Because I think a lot of times when people become parents, they feel like they're just surviving, like regardless of how they become parents. Yeah, for sure. And so, and I think especially if you've had this type of path, you just feel like you're surviving. And then you feel angry because you think, this is not how I thought it was going to be. Like, I thought it was going to be just immediately beautiful and easy and whatever. Not, and nobody actually thinks that about parenthood, but when you've gone through everything, you kind of think that. So, I think helping people just, you know, thrive, not just survive, and then also just celebrate their authentic parenthood, that there's no right way to become a parent, that there's no shame in how you became a parent, and that they deserve to celebrate exactly who they are, and then helping them figure out, okay, who's going to be your connection? Who's going to be the people that are going to help you honor this with you? And start helping them surround themselves with people who are going to do that with them, and kind of identifying that as well. So I think with that, I help, like, as we work through it, and I'll show, like, when people get the guide, I have three kind of options for people. And for me, it's like, you can do a 4-week, 8-week, 12-week, kind of depending on you. We always have a conversation before the baby's born, because I want to be able to come up with the plan, because there's no way we're going to come up with that when the baby's here. And just kind of setting expectations. I also, it's all customizable, very, so people can, you know, they can do every week, they can do every other week, they can do once a month, whatever works for them, because becoming a parent is overwhelming enough. You don't need to have a meeting every single week right away if you don't want to. So I think that's where those conversations that happen before the baby is born is really important, just because figuring out kind of what the program is going to look like for them specifically, because everybody's experience, everybody's path to becoming an intended parent is a little bit different, and a lot different sometimes. And so just kind of finding that. And so I'm excited to be working with intended parents and just helping them feel empowered in their parenthood and kind of transition into that.
I love that. So people that are interested in learning more about your program and getting the guide, where should they go?
Yes. So it's just, my website is The Empowered Space. So it's, the guide can be found at theempowered.space/intendedparents. So it's easy to find, theempowered.space/intendedparents. And that will kind of give them a space where they can then download this PDF guide.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, and we'll definitely link that on the episode description. So
perfect.
Well, it has been so wonderful talking with you and learning about your incredible journey to parenthood and now helping other parents. So thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you so much, Carrie.
Absolutely. And for those that want more information, definitely check out the links in this podcast to learn more about Alex and the work that she's doing. So thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So that brings us to the end of this episode of the Normalized Surrogacy Podcast. Again, I'm your host, Carrie Flamer-Powell. I want to again thank Alex for joining us today. Be sure to check us out at surrogacymentor.com. If you're interested in knowing whether surrogacy is right for you, take our easy 2-minute quiz on our website. You can also check us out at modernparentmentor.com if you're considering an independent journey as a surrogate or intended parent. Subscribe to this podcast to learn more about gestational surrogacy and how to have a safe, ethical, and enjoyable surrogacy journey. Talk to you next time.